Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. This is our number two of the show. The producers for the program, Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, and Henry Frayn is at the controls this morning. In this part of Focus 580, we'll be spending some time talking about the health of the Great Lakes. It is certainly an extremely important resource for the people of the United States and of Canada. It holds a fifth of the world's fresh water. It provides drinking water to something like 30 million people. And while it seems to be true that the lakes are cleaner than they were back in, say, the 1970s, there are concerns about pollution that remain. In this part of the program, we'll be talking about the health of the Great Lakes, and we'll be talking with a scientist who works with a Canadian environmental organization called the Sierra Legal Defense Fund, which is not connected with the Sierra Club. It is a different kind of organization. It's been around since, I believe, 1990, and is a large nonprofit organization that's concerned with environmental issues. Our guest is Dr. Elaine McDonald. She is a staff scientist with the organization. She's been providing expert scientific support in Sierra Legal's Ontario office since 1999. She's a professional engineer with a PhD in geo-environmental engineering. And she's talking with us this morning, I believe, from Toronto. As we talk, questions are certainly welcome. And one issue in particular that we'll be talking about is the problem of sewage, municipal sewage, that is being put into the lakes by a number of cities around the lakes, cities in the United States and in Canada. They have recently just done a report on this, and we'll be talking some about that. The report was just released at the end of November, so just a couple of weeks ago. As we talk, questions and comments are certainly welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Those are the numbers. At any point here, if you have questions, you can certainly call. Dr. McDonald, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for talking with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
You want to just talk for a moment about Sierra Legal Defense and what the organization is all about?
Yeah, we're predominantly an environmental law organization up here in Canada. So we, although I'm a scientist working for Sierra Legal, we mostly have lawyers. I think we've got four lawyers in Toronto, another four out in Vancouver, and we work on environmental law issues. We also do the odd report, such as the sewage report card, which we'll be talking about today. We do a lot of the law reform work. I think the closest comparison to an American organization would be Earth Justice, if any of your listeners are familiar with Earth Justice. We actually came from a lawyer left Earth Justice and moved up to Canada and decided we needed something similar up here and started up Sierra Legal Defense Fund up here.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go right and talk about this report. I was very struck by it, and even though we are a little ways away here from the Great Lakes, I think that people in the Midwest certainly are aware what an important resource it is and are concerned about the health. And this issue, surprisingly now at this point, it is an issue. It's not just an issue for the United States and also an issue for Canada, this issue of discharging sewage into the water. And I know it's not just a Great Lakes issue because I know your organization, this is something that you've been tracking, and that there are also concerns about places like Vancouver, for example, where they're discharging sewage into the ocean. So that's sort of another issue, but it sounds as if it's a very broad, widespread kind of a problem.
Yes, actually, we've charged the city of Vancouver for discharging sewage into the ocean, and we also tried to charge the city of Victoria on Vancouver Island, which is actually the capital of British Columbia, several years ago, but the province stepped in and stayed that. The city of Victoria had absolutely no sewage treatment at all. It was just, it still is actually just dumping raw sewage directly into the ocean, which is impacting both Canadian and American sides. So it's impacting Washington State. I think people that live in certain areas of the state have actually seen things washed up on their shore, which they know comes from raw sewage, likely from the city of Victoria. Anyways, there's been a commitment made out there to upgrade Victoria. So we've backed off of Victoria and turned our eyes to Vancouver, which is, still has some big problems because they only have primary treatment in the city of Vancouver. And tests show that the sewage actually is toxic to fish. There's a certain standard under Canadian law, toxicity standard. and it shows that the sewage final effluent, when it's discharged, actually is toxic to fish. So we've gone ahead and charged them under the Fisheries Act in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's come to the subject of the Great Lakes. What you have done is that you have put together a report, and if people are interested, they can go to your website and they can take a look at it. The Great Lakes Sewage Report Card, in which you rate a number of cities that border on the lakes, Canadian cities and American cities, in terms of the adequacy of their sewage treatment and then what ends up in the lakes. Just give us a brief summary of what it is that you found.
Yeah, what we did is we surveyed 20 cities around the Great Lakes. We tried to get information from more than 20, but some of the cities weren't willing to cooperate with us. I guess we shouldn't have been surprised by that. So we ended up with 20 cities and rated them based on sewage treatment and things like combined sewer overflows, which is something that happens in cities that have older infrastructure where they've got both stormwater and sanitary sewage being carried in the same infrastructure and during storms or heavy rainfall or snow melt, you'll get a lot of liquids running through that, which will cause sewage to flush out. And because the flow is so high, the cities can't manage that flow, and they have to discharge it from various points. And so you just get raw sewage basically being discharged, and that's what a combined sewer overflow is. So we rated them on sewage treatment, combined sewer overflow. We rated them also on things like sewer bylaws or ordinances in terms of how they control what's being discharged into the sewer system in the first place. As well as their future plans to improve their overall infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the ratings, I actually expected to see the Canadian cities doing a lot worse than the American cities because we don't have any national sewage treatment laws in Canada. To my surprise, it isn't actually what the results panned out to be. There was quite a mix. The top city was an American city, and the bottom city was an American city, and then in the middle, it was all a mix between Canadian and U.S. cities, the top one being Green Bay, Wisconsin, and the bottom being Detroit, Michigan. So really, the results are that nobody got a stellar grade. There was no A's. Top grade was a B+, and then Detroit came in at the bottom at a D.
Yeah. You mentioned the fact that in Canada there is no national standards for treatment of municipal sewage. Is that?
That's correct. Right? Yes. Unlike the U.S., under the Clean Water Act, you've got actual requirements which require cities to set a standard of secondary treatment, which is a mid-level of sewage treatment. Up here in Canada, we have no such standard, and we don't even have any such standard within the province of Ontario either, which is predominantly, you know, the whole northern section of the Great Lakes is the province of Ontario in Canada. There was a concern there that because of that we would see that the actual treatment systems would be worse in Canada. But in some cases they were. When you looked at just the sewage treatment plant, we did see that for the most part on the Canadian side, the sewage treatment plants weren't up to a secondary level of treatment, which is what's required in the United States. But what brought the U.S. grades down was the combined sewer overflow problem. It seems like some of the U.S. cities, in particular Detroit, Cleveland, Syracuse, were having quite big problems with combined sewer overflows, which caused them to have lower grades.
Mm-hmm.
So the sewage treatment plants were fairly good quality, mid-level, provided fairly good treatment, but they're having these overflow events, which are releasing raw sewage into the Great Lakes Basin.
So there, just to make sure I understand, people listening understand here, this is the problem that you get into when you have your storm sewers that take storm runoff and your sanitary sewers that take what comes out of what goes down people's sinks and down people's toilets that go into the same system. And if you get a very, very heavy rain and the system gets overwhelmed because of all that rainwater, then you get the overflow gets discharged directly, and so then you end up with untreated sewage then going
into
the water.
That's right. The cities have these overflow points because otherwise it would back up into people's homes or people's businesses. So they have to have these overflow points for the times when the flow exceeds the treatment plant's ability to treat the sewage. So, yes, those are called combined sewer overflows, and it is exactly as you described. It's a stormwater raw sewage mixture that's being discharged into the Great Lakes. There's ways to control that don't involve digging up every single street and separating the sewers, which, of course, is an unbelievably massive task. In Toronto, the city I live in, has a big problem with combined sewer overflows as well. So it's not something that's unique to the American cities. We've got the same problem up here in Canada and some of the bigger, older cities. And we do see that happening in some of the cities. For example, Rochester has installed basins to collect our combined sewer overflows, which they then treat what the effluent that's in that basin when they're able to, when they have the capacity in a sewage treatment plant, or you can even do batch treatments. Toronto is doing a similar type of thing for part of its sewage treatment system, sewage treatment collection system. However, they still have big combined sewer overflow problems. It's only dealing partially with the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Even Detroit, the city that got the worst grade, has done some infrastructure improvements around combined sewer overflows to try and control them.
You talk about the fact that, here in the United States, all municipalities are required to get their sewage treatment at least to the secondary level.
That's right.
And that there are basically these three levels, primary, secondary, tertiary, and each one, as you go up to the 1, 2, 3, you end up doing more in terms of treatment, so that at the very highest level, what you get is you could get a solid material that in many places is actually used for fertilizer, and then a liquid which is clean enough so that you could actually put that into the water and it would not be a process.
But that's right.
Sounds like the problem, but it sounds like there might even be a big difference between secondary treatment and tertiary treatment.
Yeah, and these two terms are very loose, too, in terms of what is defined as secondary and tertiary. There's different things thrown in there. But tertiary, yes, would be the highest level of treatment. It usually involves some kind of filtration at the end. You even now have to have technologies which will take the water all the way back to a drinking water quality. And that's called reclamation or renewal. And you're seeing that more and more in areas where there's water shortages. It's not something that's come about yet in the Great Lakes Basin because we don't see ourselves as being short of water. But it's certainly something that should be considered in certain circumstances as making sense, such as when you want to use it for irrigation or something.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's happened in the Salinas Valley in the U.S. and all this contamination. People are probably really worried about sewage effluent reclamation. But it is something that should be considered and looked at, which would be a very high level of treatment. On the other side, the sewage sludge issue is really complicated, which is what you mentioned, because the problem we have here in Canada is the level of toxic substances that end up in sewage sludge, which is basically what's removed from the sewage when it goes through the sewage treatment plant. It's all the solids and so on that are removed. Because there still are so many toxic substances that are being used in processes and being used in household items and so on, the sewage sludge is often not clean enough to be really used as a fertilizer on farmland. So that becomes a problem in itself. And it becomes a problem for the regulators in terms of making sure some of these toxic substances are removed from the marketplace to start with.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that all may also be a concern here in the United States with these kinds of products that end up being used for that the concern is that there are heavy metals in them, and that there are all kinds of things that might actually end up in these things that they're not removed, and that there are you would not want to put them back into the environment in the form of fertilizer, and you certainly wouldn't want to put it on land where you were growing food crops.
That's right. That's right. There's also concern regarding the pathogens that might be in there as well, if the sewage hasn't been fully treated. So yeah, it's a problem which I haven't seen a solution to be honest, in terms of the sewage sludge side. Besides, other than like some kind of a secure landfilling, which is of course very costly, but it's been something that's being widely debated. Is, you know, do you incinerate it or do you try and clean? They turn it into what they call biosolids, make it as clean as you can, and then apply it to farmland. All of those solutions have problems associated with them, so I think we have to go back and do as best we can to get the toxic substances out of the sewage sludge and then look for ways to manage it that makes sense. But we're so far away from that right now in terms of getting those toxic substances out of the sewage sludge. It's just there's no question in my mind these days that it doesn't make sense to apply it to land.
Mm. How many cities can you say how many of the big cities around the lakes are taking their sewage treatment to the tertiary level?
There was actually very few. Duluth had tertiary treatment. Duluth, Minnesota had tertiary treatment. And other than that, everybody else, London, which is in Ontario, is a small city, not right on the lake, but it's on a river that leads to the lakes, Great Lakes. Some of the cities you'll notice aren't right on the shore. They're maybe within the basin, but not right on the lake. It had one plant that had tertiary treatment. So it, really what we're seeing mostly is just secondary. Very few cities brought it up to a level of tertiary treatment.
Let me just introduce again very quickly our guest, Dr. Elaine McDonald. She is a PhD doctor. She's an engineer and staff scientist with the Sierra Legal Defense Fund. It's a Canadian environmental organization. We're talking about water quality issues on the Great Lake, particularly the results of a report that the Sierra Legal Defense Fund just put out recently looking at the issue of sewage that ends up in the Great Lakes coming from some of the cities, both American cities and Canadian cities that surround the lakes. If you were interested, you can go to their website and you can read all about it. And here on the program, questions are welcome too. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. I know that we talked just very briefly about the issue out in BC about the concerns of this sort of the same sort of issue where the sewage is being discharged into the Pacific Ocean. And there are apparently people who say it's just not a big deal, that the ocean can clean itself. It's a system that's sort of designed to flush itself, and it's not a problem. I know that your organization and others argue that it is. Taking that shift, that focus back over to the Great Lakes, what sort of environmental impact is there? And I suppose there are people who perhaps would be willing to argue that it's not that big of a problem.
Well, when you look at all the cities together, we are able to calculate that just in terms of the combined sewer overflows, it was about 92 billion liters, which if we do it in U.S. gallons, is about 24 billion gallons, which was being discharged into the Great Lakes in 1 year by the 20 cities. And those 20 cities are about a third of the basin population. You take that much, and then you consider the fact that the Great Lakes, we often think, you know, I know I'm on Lake Ontario, which is the last in the chain of the Great Lakes, and we think, okay, it's just going to wash up through the St. Lawrence River and out to the Atlantic Ocean, and it's gone, and I don't have to worry about it anymore. But that's actually not the case. The Great Lakes are a fairly closed system. Only 1% of the water in the Great Lakes is renewed every year. So I wanted to call the report the 100-year flush at one time, although nobody really understood what that meant, except for me, because it's really, we're talking about a 100-year cycle for all the water in the Great Lakes to be renewed. And of course, that's an oversimplification of it, but it's just to help your listeners understand that what we're discharging into the lakes is going to be around for a very long time. It's not as though it's going to pass through the province of Quebec and out the East Coast and out to the Atlantic Ocean. It's going to stick around. Some of it will naturally biodegrade, obviously, but most of the other, you know, the stuff that can't biodegrade is going to be there, and it accumulates in the sediment, accumulates in the biota, and affects our ability to actually use the lake. Here in Toronto, most of the summer, although we have many lovely beaches, most of them you can't use during the summer because of the level of contamination in the water. And that is a direct result of the sewage discharges. It's caused by combined sewer overflow. It happens right after a rainfall event. All the beaches are closed, and usually they're closed for most of the summer after that.
Mm. There was at one time a very significant fishery in the Great Lakes, and it is nothing like it once was. But there are still places that there is some commercial fishing, and there, of course, there's also sport fishing. Is this something that has an impact on that aspect of the environment to the point where if you managed to catch something, you wouldn't be able to eat it?
Well, fish advisories are widespread throughout the lakes. Ontario has it's like a 200-page manual on the fish you can't and can't eat throughout the province of Ontario, and about a third of that is just for the Great Lakes. And the contaminants that limit your consumption, and this is just for sports fish, are generally PCBs, pesticides, and mercury. Mercury is becoming a bigger and bigger problem. And mercury, it's mostly from atmospheric fallout, is the sources of mercury, and our love of burning coal as a society is the big problem there, which Sierra Legal, here at Sierra Legal, we're also doing work on that. So while this report identifies sewage as being a source of contamination into lakes, there are many others. And I think that's, we try to get that across in the executive summary and introduction that, you know, we're looking at sewage here, but there's also air deposition from air, there's industrial sources, there's runoff from the land, there's stormwater, there's so many other issues that we need to deal with as well. Hmm. And going back to the sewage, of course it is one of many sources of contaminants that could be affecting the fish and our ability to consume fish, as well as limiting the biodiversity in terms of the fish populations. As the water gets warmer and as it gets lower in oxygen, as the oxygen is depleted, you just get less and less diversity overall.
Well, how can one say something overall about the health of the lakes? And I mentioned the fact that I think probably going back maybe 30, 40 years, there certainly was concern at that point. And I think that some people would say that things are better than they were, not perhaps at the point where we would like them. Can one say something overall about the health of the lake and in lakes? And in fact, whether at this point you could really say that, yes, they're in better shape now than they were, say, in the 1970s.
Well, I think in the 70s, what we saw was a lot of problems with what we call eutrophication, just the nutrients, the phosphorus and nitrogens that were getting into the lakes. There was just too much of it getting in. There was no real loss to control the amount of phosphorus entering the lakes, and that was back when Lake Erie was declared dead, because there was just this they act like nutrients that cause algae to grow and plants to grow, and then you get this thing called eutrophication happening, and it eventually dies and suffocates the lakes basically by sucking all the oxygen out. We saw that happen back in the 70s, and that's where something called the Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement came out of, was the concerns regarding too many nutrients getting into lakes, and the sources of that were fertilizer and sewage and so on and so forth. So we've come back from that, that's for sure. Things are not where they were in terms of eutrophication back then as a problem, although Lake Erie, which is the most sensitive of the lakes, is showing signs of problems again. We're seeing dead zones that are appearing within Lake Erie. So there's a need to look at that issue once more in terms of eutrophication, and is this something we need to do even more controls on the nutrients getting into the lakes in certain areas anyways. But what's happened, I think, since those times is that we've got all these new chemicals that are out there, too. The flame retardants, the nonstick, the perfluorinated chemicals, which we've heard about. These are something that are fairly new within the last 20 or 30 years, which we don't fully understand the impact of. But we know they're accumulating in the biota in the Great Lakes. They're accumulating in the sediments. And they're going to be, if we don't do as much as we can to get them out of the marketplace and get them out of these, they're passing through sewage treatment because they're in everybody's homes. I think those are what's a growing concern in terms of, I guess, what we call emerging chemicals, these new chemicals, as well as things like pharmaceuticals are another problem, which is arising as we're seeing concentrations increase. So while some problems may be getting better, others are getting worse. Another one I can think of, which has become a really big concern, is invasive species and how they've been impacting the Great Lakes as well. Mm-hmm. And I think the impact of invasive species is a growing concern every day as we see more and more species entering the lakes. They say there's 8 new ones per day or something like that are coming into the lakes, and we all know what zebra mussels have done to the lakes. So there's other issues that need our attention. And right now, the Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement, which is an agreement between the U.S. and Canadian governments, is under review. A lot of these issues are coming up and as something that needs to be looked at under the guise of the Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement.
Mm-hmm. Just I can understand how pharmaceuticals end up in the water, because people take them and they're not all absorbed by the body, and some of them end up going out. But how would things like chemicals like flame retardants or some of the other things that you talked about, how do they ultimately end up in the water?
Well, they're everywhere, because they're in our computers, they're in our chairs, in the foam in our chairs, and they end up in the dust that we live amongst, and they end up in our bodies, as well as when things are disposed of and go to a landfill, they end up at the landfill and they end up in the leachate, which is then, for the most part, brought to sewage treatment plants to be so-called treated, though of course they can't really treat landfill leachate in terms of technology. So there's many different paths in terms of how these are ending up in the Great Lakes. But they are, and we're seeing the concentrations increase, and it's certainly raising flags up here in Canada. I'm not sure if there's been a lot of attention paid in the U.S. to these issues, but the Canadian government is going through an exercise right now of looking at how they can manage or even ban some of the flame retardants that are in commerce these days, or that exist out in consumer goods and so on. The European Union has taken a lead on looking at some of these various emerging chemicals, because we're finding them everywhere we look, basically, and we know they're persistent and toxic. So therefore, they're raising concerns like DDT and PCBs did back many decades ago.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Dr. Elaine McDonald. She is a staff scientist with the Sierra Legal Defense Fund. This is a Canadian environmental organization that is not connected with the Sierra Club, but has been around for, I believe, since 1990. She has been working with the fund since 1999. She is a professional engineer with a PhD in geo-environmental engineering, and she is talking with us this morning from Toronto. And we're talking about the water quality issues in the Great Lake, getting something of a view from the Canadian side of things, but obviously this is a concern both for Canada and the United States, the people of those countries, the states and the provinces that surround the lakes. And in fact, that's perhaps one of the problems with getting people together to work on this issue is that you have so many different governmental entities involved, a number of cities, states, provinces, and two countries. So getting everybody all together can be difficult. Questions welcome. In fact, we have somebody who is ready to come into the conversation. 333-9455 is the number for Champaign Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. This caller is in Urbana, here where we are, line one. Hello.
Good morning, Dr. McDonald.
Hello.
In your investigations of this problem, I'm aware that problems with sewage have been well known for decades, maybe a full half century or more, and the solutions to correcting the problems have also been known. In your organization's work, have you contacted the states in pollution control agencies, or contacted the U.S. EPA regional office in Chicago? And I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
All right.
When we surveyed, we actually surveyed mostly the regional sewer districts or the cities themselves. We did get some information from the U.S. EPA on overall combined sewer overflows in terms of volumes. There were some good reports that came out, and we followed up with them with some questions. But you are right. The problem's been known for decades. The solutions have been known for decades, and we do say that openly in the report, that it's just really a matter of funding and money. And our recommendations tend to be more directed towards the Canadian government because we don't have the national laws that you have down in the States. We have infrastructure programs, but they're at the whim of the government of the day, where I believe there's infrastructure funding available through the Clean Water Act, so it's always there available for cities to apply for. I'm not sure if that's an adequate amount of funding. I imagine it isn't, given that some cities are still having such big problems with their infrastructure. But on the Canadian side, the programs, they come and they go and they change, so the cities really can't rely on the funding they need to upgrade their infrastructure. Sometimes you get a government in that wants to direct it more towards smaller municipalities, not the big ones, which is what we're seeing right now in Ontario, where the really big problems are really with the bigger cities such as Hamilton and Toronto. We have looked at all of those questions, and I think there's still a lot that needs to be done in terms of mostly funding issues as well as establishing strong national laws, which I'm speaking purely on the Canadian side when I say that.
I know that there's a coalition of environmental organizations, and yours is one of them, Sierra Legal Defense Fund, that have come together to try to put some pressure on the provincial politics there in Ontario to pay more attention to environmental issues. And I think that it's the case that there will be provincial elections next fall. Is it next October?
That's correct.
And
yeah.
That you all are trying to, you have a number of issues and environmental issues, Great Lakes water quality issues, one of them, and that's what you and these other organizations are really trying to do, is to say to everybody who's going to be involved in that election, saying, we want you to address these issues. We want you to be talking about these things and saying to the various people who are going to be running, if elected, in what ways are you going to address these concerns?
That's right. That's right. What we saw, that the government that's in right now, they've paid a lot of attention to drinking water issues, and that's been their primary focus through their tenure. And that comes out of, I'm not sure if you remember Walkerton, that happened up here in Ontario when there was a massive E. coli poisoning in the town of Walkerton caused by contamination getting into a drinking water source.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a big inquiry that happened into a whole bunch of recommendations, and out of those recommendations have come out some new law around mostly drinking water. And what what we call source water protection, protecting drinking water sources. But that's all great work, and we're really happy that's happened. But now we're saying, government, it's time to look at the broader issue of water, not just looking at, you know, wellhead protection or drinking water protection. Let's talk about the basin. Let's talk about the Great Lakes. The Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement is a great start. And although that's an agreement between the federal governments, that review has revealed the fact that while it's a strong agreement, it basically has not been properly implemented. So while their opportunity here in Ontario is to direct attention towards the provincial government at any time, because we have a minority government federally, there's also the same kind of opportunity federally within Canada to direct attention towards where the federal government could be doing more.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that, and I'm not sure if this is the same agreement that I'm thinking of, that back in the 1970s, the two governments of the United States and Canada signed a joint kind of agreement recognizing the importance of the lakes and the fact that both governments had to work toward water quality. This was it was actually when Nixon was president of the United States and Pierre Trudeau was the prime minister in Canada.
Yeah, 1972. That's the same agreement.
That's the one. And that it was last updated sometime, I think it was in the late 1980s.
That's correct.
And that this is something that I think environmentalists, I'm sure, around the lakes are saying, look, it was great that the two countries entered into this agreement, but we really ought to be looking at on how well it's being addressed, and that there ought to at least be a review. It seems a little bit surprising to me that there apparently was no, in something like 20 years, that it hasn't been looked at seriously.
Yeah, I think there might have been some fear of opening it up with some of the previous governments. I'm not sure. But yeah, it's been since 87, I believe, since the Great Lakes Water Quality, U.S.-Canada Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement, has been reviewed. So now that it is being reviewed, and it's been quite a... under review for about a year already. It certainly has been quite an eye-opener because, you know, when we look back at the agreement, I think, wow, whoever drafted this had great foresight. It's wonderful terms in there. It's great wording in terms of protecting the Great Lakes, ecological integrity, and, you know, biological and chemical integrity, all these great terms. What seems to be lacking is the actual implementation of it. So, and there's no real way to call the two governments to task on it and say, Canada, United States, you guys haven't been doing what you said you would do under the Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement. And that's one thing that Sierra Legal, we're trying to get more teeth in the agreement by putting in some kind of a citizen's tool. The agreement's overseen by the IJCC, the International Joint Commission. And what we'd like to see as part of this review is some kind of a petition mechanism or a mechanism where a citizen who has a concern about the Great Lakes can go to the IJC and demand that the parties to the agreement look at the issue and report back to that person in terms of the steps they're going to take or the steps they already are taking. There's similar kinds of things that already exist elsewhere. If you look at under NAFTA, there's something called, there's the Commission for Environmental Cooperation, which has a citizen's tool on environmental issues as well. So we're kind of trying to model it after that and try and see if we can get the parties to agree that there needs to be something to hold the federal governments to task on that agreement.
Mm-hmm. Is there some complication here when you also consider that on the Canadian side there are provincial governments, and here on our side we have state governments that feel that they have some sovereignty issues as well, and that that if there's some kind of a national agreement, then either in the provinces or the states, that those governments are going to say, well, but we have some concerns here that need to be addressed, and that they want to either weigh in, maybe they want to weigh in on regulations that are imposed, they want to weigh in on anything that's going to happen in terms of remediation, that somehow that they have their concerns that they want to be stated to, and in fact that maybe can either slow down or sort of get in the way of a more comprehensive kind of national standards or a national addressing of the problem.
Oh, there's definitely that. I think you hit the nail on the head, particularly up here on the Canadian side, because under our Constitution, it's not really clear in a lot of cases who has the jurisdiction on various issues. The federal government has been reluctant to step in on issues pertaining to, say, for example, sewage treatment. They see that as a provincial responsibility. Their role in Canada has been more about the management of toxic substances and then things like navigation and all that, which is obviously very federal. So, there's a lot of finger-pointing back and forth saying, you know, well, that's the province's job or that's the federal government's job. We get that quite a bit because it's not clear. I think in the U.S. it's a little bit more clear. The U.S. EPA sets the bar. The states can then exceed that bar if they want to. But the U.S. EPA has that power to set the bar at a certain level across the country. But up here in Canada, it's a lot more difficult. The federal government has responsibility for fisheries, which is one of the reasons why we've gone and prosecuted under the Fisheries Act quite often, because it's quite a strong act, and it has strong provisions regarding pollution, prevention that may impact fisheries, where each province within Canada will have its own laws with respect to other aspects of pollution. Some may not have much at all in some areas, and some will have more. And Ontario itself does have a lot of guidelines and so on related to sewage management, for example, but no actual law that says, you know, thou shalt not discharge sewage that has not been treated to a secondary level, mm-hmm. Nothing like that.
Well, certainly here on our side, getting together the governments of, I think that there are seven, is it right? There are seven American states.
There might be eight.
Eight states that border on the lakes, and getting all those state governments together to agree. I'm just thinking about, for example, there has been now a very long process trying to get the state governments to agree on the issue of water removal from the lakes.
That's right.
Because from time to time, people have said, well, there are people out in the western parts of the United States who need water. Why don't we just put in a pipe and we could ship the water? Or people have said, well, gee, there's an international market for water. Let's just fill up tankers with water from the Great Lakes and we can sail them to someplace else and sell them to those people. And the state governments around the lakes have said, well, we don't want that to happen. And had been engaged in a years-long process of negotiating an agreement that the state's governors have signed on to, but they have yet to be approved by the state legislature. So I think just that his process had just started now after years of talking about it, has just started in the state of Ohio. I think their House has approved this. It's going on to the Senate. And that's just the very first state, and it's got to move through all of these states. So who knows how long it would take before all the states actually implement this agreement that's been now up for discussion for, I think, 7 years, if I'm remembering right. It's certainly been a long time.
Yeah, Great Lakes Annex, I think, is what we refer to it up here anyways, although it's a very general term. But similarly, there's the agreement between the eight governors or the eight states, but there's also another agreement that's parallel to that, that's between these states and the provinces. In this case, it's Ontario and Quebec have been included because they're including the very, you know, part of the St. Lawrence River in it. So there's actually, and it's that one's more or less a gentleman's agreement because it's between states and provinces, not between federal governments. So it's something that the states and the provinces will have to honor. But that agreement's been signed, the one between the provinces and the states. And now we're watching the progress, as you just described so well, of the one, but the compact, I guess, is what it is between the various states on diversions. But you're right, that has been a very long and drawn-out process, and there had to be some compromises along the way. I know one of the issues in the United States was counties that straddle the basin and being allowed to divert water outside of the basin, but within a county, because they don't, of course, want to have two separate drinking water systems for one county. That was one thing, I think, that had to be given in on more or less from the Canadian side anyways, because our concern, looking at it from up here, where we even north of the Great Lakes, there's still a lot of fresh water, our concern was more what would happen on the American side if diversions of water were allowed outside of the Great Lakes Basin. And looking at the Midwest and looking at areas like Arizona, where there's been so much population growth and obviously very limited water, we're thinking, wow, you know, this could be a really big concern. So that's why we were glad we were able to go into that negotiations with the U.S. states from the Canadian perspective and get some kind of an agreement. But, yes, it's not final until they've all signed on. So.
Mm-hmm. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Let me again introduce our guest, Dr. Elaine McDonald. She is an engineer and staff scientist with the Sierra Legal Defense Fund. It is a nonprofit organization based in Canada, interested in enforcing and strengthening environmental laws. It was first formed in 1990 in Vancouver, where they had just two people. Now they have more than 40 lawyers, scientists, other staff at two offices. They have offices in Vancouver and in Toronto, where Dr. McDonald is this morning. And questions are welcome. We're talking here about water quality issues in the Great Lakes, and particularly we started out talking about this major report that the organization just released about the problem of sewage from cities around the lakes in the United States and in Canada releasing sewage into the Great Lakes. And if you're interested, you can go to the website of Sierra Legal and you can read that report and also see other things about this organization. And questions here are welcome if you'd like to call in 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And we have a caller in Champaign and we'll talk with them. Line one. Hello.
Yeah. In terms of Chicago, the deep tunnel project, was that considered a success, or was there a comparison done before the completion of it? I think it's completed at this point for the overflow.
Well, Chicago was kind of a funny beast for us to deal with because it actually doesn't discharge its sewage into the Great Lakes. It discharges it, you know, kind of out the back door down the Illinois River towards the Mississippi. And we were really trying to take a Great Lakes basin or ecosystem approach to the report. So we surveyed Chicago, and they did provide us with information, although they said we don't release any of it into Lake Michigan. It all goes down, you know, towards the Mississippi River and the Illinois River. And Chicago got a B minus based on the information they gave us over the last year. I think we got the information from them probably in the spring of 2006 in terms of their overflows and so on. But that B minus was not included in a comparison with the other cities because we were trying to compare the cities that are discharging into the Great Lakes. So I don't know when that tunnel project would have been completed, but the information in the report comes from about, about 8 months ago from the city of Chicago. So it sounds like your listener knows more about it than I do in terms of the timeline of completion, but the Chicago did report to us that they have an annual overflow of about 6,000 million gallons of sewage, and they have several sewage treatment plants in the city of Chicago. They do have a combined sewer system. They've got 42% of their sewer system is combined. So they do have prompt combined sewer overflows, but those overflows are going into creeks and channels and rivers that are all heading south and not north into Lake Michigan.
Yeah. Also, do you include in the report of how much water is being taken from the various cities from let's say you know the lakes and particularly I know about the Chicago area, but. You know, Lake Michigan, is that because I know that's expanding in the Chicago area all the way down to the suburbs and past.
You mean the drinking water? The drinking water takings? Right. Yeah, the same thing's happening here in Ontario, and we didn't look at that issue, and somebody suggested later that would be an interesting follow-up is to look at drinking water sources compared to where they're dumping sewage, because the same thing's happening in southern Ontario because there's so much growth. Cities that were formerly on groundwater have outgrown their groundwater sources and are now building these great big pipes down to the lakes to get their drinking water from. So the water takings are likely on the increase. And you know, we don't even have a system sophisticated enough to be able to tally all the water takings together. But that is something I think that's going to come through this agreement we were just speaking about between the eight states and Quebec and Ontario, the Great Lakes Annex Agreement. I think they're required to start collecting all that information and putting it together so we'll be able to track the increases in water takings.
What about now in terms of Wisconsin, Milwaukee? How did that rate?
Milwaukee, I get my list here. Okay, they came in ninth out of 20, so they didn't do that badly, actually. Top half of the class, if you want to call them. They got a C+. We also ranked everybody because everybody was in the B's and C's mostly and a couple of D's, so we thought it would be interesting to rank everyone according to their grade point average, so to speak. So Milwaukee got a C+. They came in ninth overall. They have secondary treatment, and they also have removed phosphorus, which is important. It's important that a lot of treatment plants we looked at, they may have secondary treatment, but that may not include phosphorus removal, and phosphorus is one of those chemicals which can lead to eutrophication or too much nutrients. So they do remove phosphorus, and they have some sewage. They have some overflows, but not as bad as other cities. I guess that's why they came out as high as they did.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. Other questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. I think it's where the point is well taken. We didn't mention it, but that water quality is certainly an issue, but water use is an issue. For all of those states and governmental entities that are surrounding the lakes, that a lot of these places depend on the lake for their drinking water. So, and that demand for residential use, for industrial use, we know all of those uses, that demand continues to go up. And I think that all these various governments are going to have to spend a lot more time talking together about how they're going to manage that resource. And I think probably there are a lot of places where no matter where it is they're getting their water from, there's going to have to be a lot more intergovernmental cooperation with governments talking about how it is they're going to manage the resources, because the demand on the resources are just going to keep going up.
That's so true. And we did have a brief look to see, just to get some examples of what kind of programs cities are running in terms of water efficiency. And I think that's one thing that Milwaukee actually did pretty well on, because it looked like they did have some program directed towards trying to at least make residential users more efficient in terms of using their water. We saw the same thing in Toronto and Peel region, which is a kind of a suburban region outside of Toronto, where cities are offering rebates for things like, replacing your toilet with low-flush toilet or low-flow water showerhead, and all these things we've heard of before, rain barrels to collect rain rather than using your tap water to water your lawn. Moving away from hard surfaces, which generate a lot of stormwater runoff, and towards more permeable-type surfaces in cities. These are all steps that we can move towards, which will both affect the amount of sewage that's going into a sewage treatment system, and therefore the impact of overflows and so on, and all the things we talked about with sewage, with the too much sewage going to the sewage treatment plants and unable to handle that flow. So getting stormwater basically out of the sewage treatment systems, as well as efficiencies and water efficiencies, collecting your rainwater and using that, using lower flow and more efficient appliances and so on and so forth. The report didn't really compare those in any detail. It just highlighted some examples from some of the cities. But I think that's definitely a direction I'd like to see. We're thinking of redoing this report every 2 or 3 years, and it might be something we look at more closely next time.
Mm-hmm. We haven't really talked very much about industrial, I guess I'm thinking kind of about point source industrial pollution, but that is an issue. Now this particular report we've talked so much about, it doesn't really address that, but you did talk a little bit earlier about the problem of various kinds of toxic pollutants in the lakes, concerns about increasing mercury, and that comes, and I think I understand this correctly, that mostly that is, it precipitates out of the air, and it comes out of coal-burning power plants.
That's right. That's the largest increasing source of mercury. There's certainly other sources of mercury, but in terms of what's increasing and anthropogenic sources of mercury, it's coal. It's coal-fired power plants, which we have 5 of in Ontario, for example, and I know there's many down in the United States. And the Great Lakes, like any large water body, tend to suck in air contaminants almost, because when the air travels over the Great Lakes, it cools and it causes it to precipitate out. So you often, they tend to get more of deposition than a land base would, for example. Hmm. So it is a growing concern, and it's something we're not seeing enough action on in terms of government in Canada, that's for sure. They haven't really passed any national laws directed at coal-fired power and reducing mercury. We have something called the Canada-wide standard, which sounds like a law, but it actually isn't a law. It's more like an objective. And Ontario has opted out of that standard because Ontario has this commitment to close down its coal-fired power plants, but hasn't been able to do that because the lights would go out if they did. So we need replacement power, basically. So we're kind of in this funny situation up here in Ontario with respect to coal-fired power. At Sierra Legal, we've done some work looking at mercury from coal-fired power in the United States as well, and we actually have a petition before the Commission for Environmental Cooperation, which is that commission I mentioned earlier under NAFTA. requesting an investigation of mercury impacts under the Clean Water Act from coal-fired power plants in the United States. Now, that's kind of stuck in this, you know, we're waiting for action on that, and we haven't seen much happen yet, so...
We're just about the point where we have to finish up. I'm interested because, again, I mentioned earlier that your organization, a number of others, have come together and have said that in the run-up to next year's provincial elections there in Ontario, you'd like much more attention paid to environmental issues. And I'm just wondering, as your assessment of generally people in Canada, is this something that they really think is important, and just how they're willing to back that concern up? Because I know here in the United States, for example, you go around, you ask people, is the environment important? Well, they'll say, well, yes, it is. But then the question is, well, okay, where do you go from there? How do Canadians do on these issues, do you think?
Well, I've seen a shift in the last about, I would say, 6 months, where environment probably came after education and healthcare and all these other things that people are concerned about. And it seems to have moved up to becoming one of the top one or two, perhaps, in terms of what Canadians care about. And I think I don't know what the actual issue was that turned people around. I think it might be climate change more than anything, and the concerns around climate change. We've got to we signed it on to the Kyoto Protocol, but yet we are not meeting our numbers. We're nowhere near meeting our numbers, and now we have a federal government which is threatening to pull out. I think that got a lot of people really angry in Canada. So now environment is something that people care more about, and not just climate change. The response from this report on sewage was enormous, you know, a lot more than we expected, which is good, and an indication that people are starting to care a lot more about their environment, and perhaps maybe it's because they're thinking about their grandchildren, future generations. We know there's probably going to be more water shortages in the future, and we need to protect and cherish the resources we have for future generations. But there has been a shift, and I see environment as being one of the top issues now in Canadians' minds.
All right. Well, there we must end. Our guest, Dr. Elaine MacDonald, is a staff scientist with the Sierra Legal Defense Fund, a Canadian environmental organization. If you're interested in finding out more about this group and about this specific report about the issue of sewage in the Great Lakes, you can go to their website. Dr. MacDonald, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me.